This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
this particular summit is called the One Planet Summit, is really to give, if you like, a bit of a push to the Paris Climate Change Agreement, which was signed here in Paris 2 years ago.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. We'll have full details coming up.
Also in the Gambia, school authorities and students recently took part in a forum to address the issue of lack of discipline in country schools. And organizations working with Zimbabwean migrants in South Africa say the main reason most are choosing to remain in their more affluent neighbor is job opportunities.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, French President Emmanuel Macron gathered business leaders and 50 world leaders in Paris for a summit today. The focus of the meeting was on boosting funding to fight climate change. The summit comes 2 years after nearly 200 nations agreed to the Paris Climate Accord. It calls for nations to limit greenhouse gas emissions and for rich countries to help developing countries deal with the impacts of climate change. U.S. President Donald Trump was not among those invited to take part in the conference. Last year, Trump announced the U.S. was pulling out of the accord, saying it disadvantages the United States to the exclusive benefit of other countries. Reporter Catherine Field is in Paris covering the summit. She spoke with me about the important role developing countries play in mitigating climate issues.
This particular summit is called the One Planet Summit, is really to give, if you like, a bit of a push to the Paris Climate Change Agreement, which was signed here in Paris 2 years ago. The French President Emmanuel Macron has, if you like, he's tried to establish himself as the man who can push the rest of the world into agreeing to really get on top of climate change. Just within the last 24 hours, the French president said that the real impetus for this was when the American president decided to walk away from that Paris Agreement. Emmanuel Macron said that this really created, if you like, a huge momentum to create a counter momentum, to really get on top of everything that needs to be done to get climate change under control. And in that respect, he wants to get all these leaders together, particularly also your local mayors who've also come here, your local businesses, to get them to come together and particularly to talk about the financial issues. That means raising money to give to developing countries to help them with their clean energy, to, if you like, also keep an eye on some of the development banks and make sure that they're not lending money to countries so as they can open new coal plants. And it's matters like that, particularly the financing, that Emmanuel Macron says is so important now because, as he put it, he doesn't want people to come to him in 20 and 30 years' time and to say, you did nothing. He feels that now is the time to do something.
Well, one big example is the Burkina Faso example. Can you tell us about this and what is going on there regarding climate change?
The one particular resource that Burkina Faso has, like most of the Sahel region, is sunshine. And just in late November, Emmanuel Macron was in Burkina Faso, and he was there for this particular solar power plant on the outskirts of the capital, Ouagadougou, when it came on stream. This is a huge solar power plant, 55 hectares. And what it will do in particular is it will cut energy dependence and it will boost renewables. So one of the things that the French Development Agency did was it funded half of this particular project. It funded $25 million of this. The remainder of it, this financing, came from the European Union. So what Emmanuel Macron is going to say to the delegates today is he's going to say, look, you know, this is something concrete. When this is really at maximum capacity, it will mean that Burkina Faso has a lot of its energy needs coming from solar. The whole object of this is that by 2030, Burkina Faso will have 30% of its energy needs coming from solar. It will also mean that this particular country, it doesn't have the energy dependence. At the moment, Burkina Faso gets a lot of its energy from Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. So this big project, which France helped finance, that was really there, is what he's going to hold up as saying, you can't just tell these countries to do more. You have to help them with the new technology. And in that way, France, and of course also China, is absolutely there at the forefront, helping, not just handing over the money, but saying, okay, here's how we can work together. And I think that is really the next move that Emmanuel Macron is going to be holding up and saying, okay, let's look at these countries that are developing. Let's look at the resources they have there, and let's work with them to use those resources.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
In the Gambia, school authorities and students recently took part in a forum to address the lack of discipline in the country's schools. The national state broadcaster, the Gambia Radio and Television Services, organized the meeting, which it called Face the Nation. English to Africa reporter Pandera Mbai reports.
The forum followed the expulsion of a high school female student following what school authorities call inappropriate dancing with a male student. 10 orders from various schools were also suspended for misbehavior. Karomo Bojang is the principal of Nusrat High School in the town of Bundunkakunda.
Discipline in schools involves the student's ability to obey school rules, to respect teachers, to be able to carry their schoolwork according to what they are asked to do. The moment any student who violates that, we consider student as an indisciplined student.
The forum brought together schools within the Greater Banjul area. Its goal was to investigate the main causes of misbehavior and to propose solutions to the problem. Veteran retired Gambian educationist Omar Ndur notes that the issue of indiscipline in schools should be approached critically.
Yes, discipline is going down and we must find a solution to it. If society is getting rotten, I think the answer should be from the schools, because these are the seeds of tomorrow Gambia, and we need to bring them up with the good morals.
Saini Giba belongs to a group called Gambian Association of Teachers of English.
I think we need to bring back counseling, because I think counseling needs to be strengthened. Some of these children, from where they are coming from, they need to be counseled. The schools, honestly, have a big role to play in supporting these children to become very responsible.
Some say the problem relates to a lack of proper parenting. They say there is a lack of decorum among some spouses that influence their children. Others, like this student, blames the exposure of students to foreign cultures and lifestyles, including the West and neighboring countries like Nigeria.
My blame goes to our parents and the school administration. In this case, like, a student spent most of his time at home. So if at all that a student has been treated well at home with good morals and behavior, there is no way that I can see if a student go to school, he or she will be influenced with misbehaviors.
Another student, Ablai Gay, says another problem regards to male teachers socializing or dating with female students. Most schools have rules against this, though some students are not comfortable complaining against adult predators.
How can students be disciplined while teachers themselves are dating students in the school? Teachers date students in the school, and also students visit teachers at their houses.
At the end of the meeting, participants urge parents to attend school parent meetings and to track their children's performance and behavior. They also urge parents to instill in young people good values and manners. In the early 70s leading to the 80s, corporal punishment was enforced in Gambian schools. It was later abolished by the former administration of President Sir Dauda Kairaba Jawara. Today, teachers and parents are concerned that the pendulum has swung from strict codes of behavior to too much freedom, bordering on lack of respect and indiscipline. For VOA Africa, This is Pandering by reporting.
Human rights organization Amnesty International accuses European governments of being complicit in the torture and abuse of tens of thousands of refugees and migrants detained in Libya in appalling conditions. The group published a report today on the issue entitled Libya's Dark Web of Collusion. It details and says how European governments are actively supporting the Libyan Coast Guard, detention authorities, and smugglers in order to prevent people from crossing the Mediterranean. I spoke with reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome about this report.
Yes, this is a damning report from Amnesty International released today, accusing European governments of complicity in the detention and torture of migrants in Libya, particularly by assisting the Libyan Coast Guard, which has been implicated in people trafficking, and sending migrants back to Libya. Now, the rights group said that these governments are knowingly complicit in the torture and the abuse of tens of thousands of refugees and migrants that have been detained by the Libyan authorities in what they call were appalling conditions in Libya. Also accused the European governments of actively supporting a sophisticated system of abuse and exploitation by the Libyan Coast Guard and smugglers to prevent these people from crossing the Mediterranean. So these are very strong words from Amnesty. And Amnesty's Europe director, John Dalhuisen, said that these refugees and migrants, as we know, are trapped in Libya and they're at the mercy of the Libyan authorities and the militias that are really just using and abusing them for financial gain.
And what has been the response to this accusation?
So far, the response has been quite muted, but this year, the Italian government has been very defensive and very proud of its decision to change its policy to stop the migrant boats from crossing the Mediterranean, to work with the Libyan government, to work with the Libyan Coast Guard and push the migrants back, mostly sub-Saharan migrants, back to Libya. Now, the Italian government has its eye on national elections, which are due to be held in Italy early next year. And this is a very clear attempt by politicians in Italy to show the voters that more is being done to control the migrant crisis and try and attract that vote, that disillusioned vote, particularly from Italians who are unemployed or struggling to make ends meet. This government and these politicians in Italy want to send a message that they are handling this crisis. And that's why, unfortunately, the migrants, I think, have been at the receiving end of what is a very harsh policy.
I understand also some new numbers have come out today regarding the migrants. Can you shed some light on this information?
Yes, the Italian government has released fresh figures showing that 117,500 migrants have so far arrived in Italy this year. That's compared to 175,000 for the same period in 2016. That's a drop of 33%. The fall that we have seen has been even more dramatic since July, August this year when the Italian government started clamping down on the arrivals.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Today, French President Emmanuel Macron gathered business leaders and 50 world leaders in Paris for a summit to boost funding to fight climate change. In the Gambia, school authorities and students recently took part in a forum to address the lack of discipline in the country's schools. And the human rights organization Amnesty International accuses European governments of being complicit in the torture and abuse of tens of thousands of refugees and migrants detained in Libya. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
More news around the continent. Organizations working with Zimbabwean migrants in South Africa say the main reason most are choosing to remain with their more affluent neighbor is job opportunities. The African Center for Migration and Society in Johannesburg, for example, says Zimbabweans will only begin returning to the country of their birth in big numbers once the economy there improves dramatically. An estimated 2 million Zimbabweans now live in South Africa. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Grass flies as a burly man in a blue overall soaked with sweat mows the lawn at a house in a Johannesburg suburb. Mike Dube arrived in the city from Bulawayo with his family 15 years ago. Groups protecting the rights of Zimbabweans in South Africa say most of the migrants are employed informally, for example as farm laborers. In the cities, many Zimbabwean men, like Dube, work as gardeners. He says he likes working outdoors, even though it's tough physical labor.
Cleaning, digging, taking the weeds out, yeah, and cleaning the swimming pool.
Dube says he's heard stories about South Africans paying Zimbabweans so-called slave wages. But he says South Africa and its people have been good to him since he started work in Johannesburg 15 years ago.
I'm getting lunch, money, and breakfast. Got a wife and 3 children here. He's gone to school, he's finished school, he's all right, no problem, yeah.
He says his family had no choice but to leave Bulawayo.
It's very bad because sometimes it's short for food, no money to pay everything, school. If he is going to the clinic, can't find the medicine. Other people is dying in everything.
In South Africa, his family is doing well. Dube and his 2 sons are gardeners. His wife's a domestic helper, and his daughter's a trainee chef. He says these jobs, as menial as they are hard to come by in Zimbabwe. But Dube insists he still loves Zimbabwe and returns regularly.
Every year, June, I'm going to Zimbabwe. And December, you see, you're like family. Then I'm coming back.
Packing leaves in a plastic bag, he says it's Zimbabwe's poor economy and lack of development that always disappoint him.
No, it's worse. It's worse, worse, worse. But yeah, it's better because you get everything here. Yeah. And then you get money to send to Zimbabwe to buy some milling. Every month, send money there.
Dube says most Zimbabweans he speaks with about the recent political changes in their homeland have the same opinion as he does.
If Mugabe was out, I'm happy. Because Mugabe, he don't care about the people. Otherwise, he's changed a little bit.
As he trims another patch of grass, Dube laughs and says he won't return to Zimbabwe because he doesn't trust crocodiles. The joke's aimed at the country's new leader, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who's nicknamed the Crocodile for his political ruthlessness. Dube says if Mnangagwa proves to be as dedicated to improving all Zimbabweans' lives as he is to his political career, then maybe a move back to Bulawayo will be more than just a dream. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
New York is a magnet for immigrants looking for freedom and opportunity in the U.S. At the same time, American life is enriched by the diverse cultures and fresh perspectives that immigrants bring. Adam Phillips reports.
That's a video recording of South African children in a township participating in one of Dramatic Needs workshops. A world away in New York's Carnegie Hall, Amber Sainsbury, Dramatic Needs founder, takes a break from rehearsing the children's monologues to explain that it's not only food, clothing, and medicine that traumatized and impoverished children need.
We're not suggesting for a minute that we airdrop art materials into war zones, but once they have the basic necessities of life, but life is still incredibly hard and trauma continues to occur, we believe that there's a merit to using the arts, which are a very gentle way for children to learn and to express themselves and to thereby cope with what they're going through.
Sainsbury says children often find it difficult to put the trauma they've suffered into words.
But they can, if given enough freedom and space, make a mark on a piece of paper or sing a song or present a character that has a thoroughfare between what they've gone through and what their audience is receiving. And there's something inherently therapeutic about that.
In a 2015 London performance of the children's monologues, the British rapper Lil Sims reprised one child's thoughts this way.
Wait, no, this is our story. This is our fate. This is our kingdom. This is our place. This is our freedom. Cut off their chains. This is our struggle. This is our pain. This is our love. This is our trust. This is our daughters.
Many famous actors have performed at Dramatic Need fundraisers. They include Daniel Kaluuya, Trevor Noah, Susan Sarandon, and Nicole Kidman. Here, Benedict Cumberbatch dramatizes one South African child's memory of slaughter in his township.
I don't like to think what might have happened to my friend, what might have happened to the other people that disappeared from my village. I don't like to have that thought in my brain. The bodies that they find every week, rotting in the fields.
In one story, a girl recounts repeated sexual abuse by her uncle. She was afraid to tell her grandmother about it because her rapist was supposed to be the family's protector. Male actor Kit Harington dramatizes the story.
When I was 13 years old, I was raped. It was my uncle, my grandmother's son. He climbed in my window in the middle of the night and it isn't a big enough word to say what he did.
Sainsbury says this girl's odyssey from trauma to healing has been a deeply moving personal story for her as well.
We have worked with her now for over 5 years, and I have seen an extraordinary recovery of self and spirit from her. She is coping incredibly well. We were out there in January and saw her, and she did a beat poetry performance, and it was one of the most moving things that I've ever seen, and I'm so proud of her, and she is an extraordinary example of courageousness and resilience.
Some use dance to move toward recovery. The Via Vondels Pansula dance crew, heard here demonstrating their moves offstage in Carnegie Hall, expresses the emotional range in their art. Pansula dance evolved in South Africa's black townships as a form of exuberant, high-energy protest during the apartheid era. Sindile Nolunga leads the troupe.
Like, the way we dance is the way we show how we live. You see, so whatever we see in the neighborhood, whatever we see local, we do on stage just to show people like how we live. All the pain I'm feeling, I'm going to show you the pain through dance. Mm-hmm. All the happiness I'm feeling, I'm going to show you through dance. Through my dance, through my body, is the language to your eyes and your mind.
For most of its 10-year history, Dramatic Need has worked in South Africa and Rwanda. But it's now opening a branch office in the Bronx in New York, one of the poorest districts in America. According to Amber Sainsbury, bravery is a human quality and freedom is a human right. And that stands true regardless of the color of your skin, the passport you carry, or the language you use to tell your story. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Also, today you can watch a live stream of the U.S. Senate's hearing on Zimbabwe's political developments starting at 1900 UTC on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Indabele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com, voaindebele.com, and voashona.com.
Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports and tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
The Voice of America, VOA.